I don't even hear that.
Blog Talk Radio.
If a 55-year-old beat-up professional wrestler could do this...
Diamond Cutter. Turn your palms out, spread your fingers wide, and push. I call them exploding push-up. Black Crow. The 10-second YRG push-up.
What could you do?
An internet weight loss sensation. Nearly 3 million clicks to see Arthur Borman's transformation from this to this. 100 pounds gone with yoga?
Most people just want to lose weight. They want to feel better. They want to try to get their life back. Arthur wanted to do all that, but he really wanted to walk again. That's powerful.
If I can come this far without surgery, without drugs, without machines, without any of that,
what could you do?
I have been through every diet and every gym in Northern California. What DDP Yoga has done is bring it all back into perspective. You are flipping amazing.
If you take that first step and you start doing DDP Yoga, then you'll start to change your life.
DDP Yoga changed my life, and it will change yours.
Are you guys ready?
Ready!
3, 2, 1.
Let's ignite this baby.
Yeah! High five.
Hello, hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another hour, or whatever, DDP Radio. Robert, why don't you hit our Twitters out there, DDP Yoga, at DDP Yoga, and at Real DDP, and let people know that we are live and on color. We got a really awesome guest tonight. I'm really excited about having her on. But before we do bring her on, I do want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about the extravaganza, the DDP Yoga Retreat extravaganza. Anybody who was there will tell you that's exactly what it was. We did our DDP Yoga. We ate amazing foods down there. Actually, Angie got in the kitchen and was baking up some awesome gluten-free cookies and brownies. I can't remember what else she cooked, but she baked up a couple things there with some of the people, our members from Team DDP Yoga. We had Stacy and Bill being the man in the kitchen, and he made some amazing gluten-free dishes, and we just had a really great time down there just baking that one day and eating, and then, of course, we partied, too, because this is a DDP Yoga, and I grew up in the nightclub business from 17 till I was 34 years old, so we got to also have a party there as well. I want to let you guys know that July 15th, we've got the dates down, it'll be either July 11th through the 15th or 11th through the 16th. We're going to do either 4 or 5 day. I'm going to stay down there for a total of 5 days. And if you get in before October 1st, and anybody who actually was, you know, the last trip that we just went, you will qualify. And we're going to leave it open until October 1st to get your deposits in. It's only $150, but it locks you down. And with all the people we've had come, you know, 8,000 members to Team DDP Yoga, and our Facebook is, we're approaching 9,000 members. That's one word, DDP Yoga, wow, on Facebook. Over 9,000, almost 9,000 people there. And I got to tell you, if you're ever just looking to be inspired quick and, you know, you aren't, you know, you're just picking online, you're going through Facebook and you aren't on site, the teamddpyoga.com site, just go on Facebook. Just hit that DDP Yoga, one word, Facebook, and read some of the things people are putting up there, man. They're amazing. I got to share one with you, and I didn't even have it queued up here, but I'm always thinking, what do I want to say before I go on this? And then I remember, oh, that's right, I want to say that right there. So it's easy to pull up. Her name was Amy. And, you know, I'm just going through, and anybody who puts a, you know, a quote up there, I've got to go through and okay them so that you guys can see them. So, you know, I read them all. I read absolutely everything, and anything that's up there, I'm answering, either on that page or the DDP Yoga page. I should say DDP Diamond Dallas page. I can't even find this thing now. I figured it's because I didn't have it queued up. But I really want to find this girl who was talking about her blood pressure. And she actually was on blood pressure medicine for years. And wow. Now she had just checked it out. since she was 20. I can't find the exact quote, but her name is Amy, and she's up there on the site somewhere.
Actually, I've got it right here.
I have it from memory. She has her on blood pressure medicine. She was in her 20s. Now she's in her 40s, and just for the heck of it, she went by her her doctor and had him check, and she was 117 over 77, and she said that she had not. She said. Mark, she said she has not been lower than 135 over 90 with the medication. So that, you know, she said after 3 months workout, but again, also no gluten, no dairy, no processed foods. So we all know what that does as well. So it was, I was like so psyched to hear that. And she actually is the reason why now we're screen captioning people's, quotes up there or their little blogs. And Robert, I saw that you had a first of all, I want to welcome, hey Robert, welcome to the show, bro. Appreciate you picking up the handles here. And we've got Sparky, how you doing today, bro?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, man. That's great news about Amy, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we have we've got our registered nurse slash massage therapist slash godmother of DDP Yoga, Terry, sitting in for Stacy tonight. How you doing, T?
Hey, I'm doing great. How's everybody?
Doing good.
Awesome, man. Really excited about this show. And the Facebook thing, my ADD slipped around a little bit there. I realized I didn't welcome anybody. Robert, that thing you did there, real faces, real people, real results or whatever it was, is that actually going to be up on the DDP Yoga site as well?
Yeah, that's where it's based at right now. I haven't made it live, but I should have that up there in the next day or so. And I got to commend you because I screen capped Amy's thing and I put it up there, so I'm staring at it right now, and you got the numbers exactly right from memory.
Well, I actually wrote to a couple of people because that was like, that's the kind of thing that really makes me go, man, this, what we're doing is working. It's awesome. All right, before we get into our guests, I want to get a couple of other things here. Got that? We'll let everybody take. Dick Snake Roberts is in his second week of doing DDP yoga, and he's on two-a-days right now. And I'm really excited to help get back some part of his body from being so beat years in the ring and in drugs and alcohol. And, yeah, we'll get into that later on. I just want to put a shout-out to Jake. And there actually was a story in Muscle and Fitness of Chris Jericho, and they put over yoga this and yoga that, but Chris only does one yoga, and that's DDP yoga. So I sent the guy who wrote the article, who's a fan of mine, I'm like, Sam, please, you know that my yoga is completely different than any other yoga. He goes, oh, man, I'm sorry, dude, dropped the ball there. I'm like, well, whatever. But I had to.
He didn't drop the ball. He threw it down and shot it.
Disappointing, man. Ticked off because that would have been an awesome place to really help get the word out, you know, but whatever. It all worked out. Yeah, I just saw Chris at SummerSlam, and he had a hell of a match with Ziggler. And afterwards, we're backstage and we were talking, and now he's on the road. He's actually on the road right now with Fozzy, which was great. I'm glad they put him over going out. And, he just, again, walking away, he grabbed me, shook my hand, he goes, dude. Because the only reason I'm doing this I'm doing right now is because of you, and I so appreciate what you did. And I'm like, as much as Chris Jericho does for us promoting DDP Yoga, I was just really nice for him to say that.
Absolutely.
A couple other things. I put up the 15-minute salad, that crazy concoction of a salad that I did back in my house before I sold it in L.A., I just was on the road with Steve Yu, and we went and actually filmed Jake Roberts the actual first day. So we had, so you can see where he started. And I decided to do my salad on the road. And I do this everywhere I go now. Go by Whole Foods. I pick up my organic greens. I pick up a couple other things, and I go to the hotel because the salad that I want, that I'm going to want to eat, it's going to be like $35 if I go to a restaurant and order. And I'm still not going to eat what I want. What'd you say, Sparky?
I said, true that, man. You can't get a salad like that anyway.
So I'm showing how to make a salad in your room. And Steve actually filled it. The lady brings the refrigerator in. Probably takes me like 6 minutes to make the salad. But I wanted people to see it and see, like, is it more work being better on the road? Yes. But is it worth it? And if you hear what our guest has to say, you'll see. Yes. Not to have the least amount of chemicals in your body. I'll be coming up September 15th. I'll be in Nashville for our
DDP. We're starting to lose you, brother.
Say what?
You're starting to lose you. You're starting to fade on us.
Losing? Oh, God. Dang it. All right. Can you hear me now or no?
It's in and out.
In and out.
Oh, my. That's what you say. I want to thank Steve Yu for getting this. That I'm calling in right now. So let me just switch over to calling in. Robert, catch me here. And I'll do the call. Everybody else has to do. Sparky, pick up for me till I come back.
All right, you got it. Yeah, so Robin's coming on, man. I can't wait to hear some of the information that she has. Like Alice was saying, she's going to add so much stuff to this. And she's got a real cool angle on it because she brings in just about everything, and she doesn't even forget the kids. Isn't that pretty cool?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, can you hear me?
We got
you. Are you getting the echo?
We got echoes out the kazoo. So.
Oh, my God.
That's worse than every other word.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, normally it goes so much smoother than this.
Yeah. It goes from worse to smooth, not from worse to worse. thanks everybody for hitting in there. But, yeah, it's as soon as we get Dallas back, as soon as we get Robin on the line, it's going to be – she's got some really awesome stuff because I am waiting to hear because I got kids, and there's so many people with kids on the site now, Terry, that – you know, we focus a lot on ourselves, but she gives you so much information, it'll kind of shock you into saying, I got to get my kids to eat a little bit better.
Are you there, brother?
Absolutely. And I'm really concerned about my granddaughter, who's 19 months, and she, my son carries both my genes, the celiac and the intolerant, and so she has to get at least one, and they are raising her semi-gluten-free. They cheat a lot more, and it makes me crazy because they're the generation of fast food. But I have, she's totally every way I eat, she eats, and they partly do it, and I'm working, I'm focused on it. I can't be too bitchy, but I'm working on it.
Okay, I'm back. Can you, hold on, Sparky, can you, do we have an echo on here?
No, you sound fine to me.
Okay,
yeah, great, bro.
Thanks for filling in. I heard what you guys are saying. We're going to get to that in 2 seconds. I just want to say that if you're any kind of a comedy fan, especially a wrestling fan as a comedy fan, I went by and saw Foley's show when he was at the Hollywood Improv. It was awesome. So I would definitely recommend. And he actually told the cookie story, and he turned it into where he put cookies in my bed on the road and just trying to get me to crack, you know, because him and Stone Cold Steve Austin were busting my chops back when we were nobodies. Very, very, very funny story. Funnier than the book. He brought up a buddy of mine named Moser there to help him out with it. It was very, very funny. And the last thing I want to mention is for some of you people who love comedy, his name is Gabe Iglesias. And Gabe is a top comedian here in L.A. He travels the world. He's been over HBO and everything at big specials. You can look him up on YouTube. You'll see that he's YouTube's, none of them got less than 5 million views. The guy's very, very funny. Turns out he's a big wrestling fan. Met him at WrestleMania. And then I went to go do Roddy Piper's podcast that will be on tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
Man,
you want to try and catch that. Say what?
You don't stop, bro.
What I was saying is he was there, and he came in early to meet with me again because he wanted to do DDP yoga. Went down and worked out with him, talked about the food, told him to go see a doctor. He called me today, saw the doctor yesterday, and he said his sugar levels were ridiculous. His diabetes is out of control. His stress through the roof. He's like, dude, I got to see you before I take off for the road, which is Friday. So tomorrow I'm going down to his place, and I'm filming everything from the pantry raid. And this guy's funny, so it's going to be interesting filming to see what
that's
we get
awesome.
Out before he heads on the road. So be watching for him. Okay. Without further ado, I've taken way too long to get here. I got to tell you where I first saw this young lady. I saw her on TED's talk, and it was actually Diane Douglas who had sent me
her video and TED Talk, and I was just so blown away by it. The first thing I thought was, God, I want to see if we can get her on the show. So, you know, I went through some of her credentials, and it's just, she's through the roof what she does. You know, she graduated top in her top woman in her class in business school. She is regarded as an expert on children health policy. She's hailed as Food Erin Brockovich by the New York Times. She's been named by Shape Magazine as Women to Shape the World, by Forbes Magazine as 20 Inspiring Women You Want to Follow on Twitter. And yes, I'm following her on Twitter. Discovery Channel says one of the 15 top visionaries. She's been recognized on shows like Dr. Oz. She's met with Ted Turner, Prince Charles, if they've seen her. They love her work. Her organization is Allergy Kids. She is just all over the place. She's just trying to get the word out. Most recently, she's been on the front cover of Team DDP Yoga, so everyone can see who and what she's all about. Please welcome Robin O'Brien. How are you, darling?
I'm good. Thanks so much, you guys, for having me on.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Robin.
You're on with a lot of like-minded people, Robin. And if a lot of people know a bit of your story, but not everyone does, especially who's tuning in. So if you could give us, you know, your story of how this started to happen, the short version of it, because we really have so many questions to ask you that we'll just let you go until you stop talking.
Well, you know, I definitely came from the camp where I was not at all dialed into any of this stuff. You know, I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. I didn't really think much about the food supply. I figured whatever was on grocery store shelves was safe. It was fine, you know, like most people. I didn't want to be told what to eat. I didn't want to be told what to feed my kids. As you touched on, I'm the oldest of four kids and very type A. And so, you know, I channeled that into education and did go to business school. And after that, you know, I was recruited by a lot of different industries, and I was really interested in the investment industry. And so I went to work as an analyst that covered the food industry and other different industries, you know. And really, truly, like, as those food companies would come through our offices, we saw everybody from Walmart to Safeway to Kroger to the Whole Foods team, you know. And when that Whole Foods team would come in and they'd care so much about all that stuff, we honestly just thought, this is a marketing niche, this is lifestyle, the rich and famous, you know, this just doesn't apply, but that's a nice business model. And really, that's as far as I got, you know. And then we moved out to Colorado. I traded that briefcase for a diaper bag. We had four kids. And truly, as any mom knows or any dad knows, like, it is a small miracle just to get a family with little kids to eat, you know. And so at that point, you don't want anybody telling you what to eat. You don't want anybody telling you what to feed those kids. You are literally just trying to get food on the table, food in their mouths, and get the job done. And that was really as far as I went with it, you know. I just figured somebody had done this homework for us. And it wasn't until one of our kids got sick. She had an allergic reaction over breakfast. And I was so clueless that I looked at the older three and I asked, you know, what'd you put in her face? Because I didn't even know what an allergic reaction looked like. You know, I'd grown up with a medicine cabinet full of everything and just thought you take medicine when you hurt and that's that. And so when she went into this reaction, I was completely disconnected from it, raced her to the doctor's office. She's going through, you know, this looks like a food allergy. And I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know anybody that had food allergies when I was a kid. You know, we all ate PB&Js. We all had a carton of milk. You know, like, those things were just everyday acts.
Yeah, right.
And so she starts rattling off these facts about food allergies. I'm just thinking, you know, since when? Because we hadn't known it as kids growing up. And why all of a sudden were we seeing 1 in 17 kids under the age of 3 with a food allergy? Or why was there a doubling of the peanut allergy from 1997 until 2002? And why all of a sudden these increases in hospitalization rates? The CDC was reporting a 265% increase in the rates of hospitalizations. I mean, genetics don't change that fast, you know? And so as I dug into that, you know, this kind of analytical research side of me that I had really developed and fostered through business school and through working as an analyst and doing the financial analysis, you know, all of that triggered. And I wanted to see the data because the numbers just didn't make sense. You could suddenly have a generation of children that were so allergic to food. because, you know, you really stop and you think about it, and it's like you have to eat this stuff to survive and to live. So what's going on that's making their body see food as a foreign threat? And as I really started to look into that data and to look into what a food allergy is and how it's when your body sees food as foreign and it reacts and, you know, wants to drive out that foreign invader, that's when I started learning that there were all of these ingredients and additives and things that had been introduced into our food supply, you know. And really at that point, you're stepping back and you're saying, okay, here I'd had this opportunity of this incredible education, but I didn't know this, and how did I not know this? And that, to me, was a fascinating piece of it, because as I started to really dig deeper into it, you know, into all of these additives, these ingredients, you know, they're things that are designed, again, to drive profitability for the food industry, which I got that as an analyst. I mean, of course you want to use cheaper ingredients. That's better for your bottom line. That's better for your shareholders. But the flip side to that was that there were no long-term human studies. There were no, you know, childhood pediatric studies that had been conducted. There were no pregnancy studies that had been conducted as a lot of these ingredients were introduced. And so,
let me ask you a question here. Are there studies going on right now for all those things you just mentioned?
You know what? There are some, depending on the ingredient that we're talking about. So, for example, one of the things that I hit on was these artificial dyes that were in the blue yogurt I was feeding my kids. And
what, what did you say was artificial flavors?
Artificial dyes and the colors.
Oh, dyes, artificial dyes, okay.
And colors, you know. And so,
right.
I mean, I loved that blue yogurt because my kids ate it. They were drawn to it, and, you know, it was easy to get a meal done when I had that on the table. But then what I learned was that countries around the world were removing those artificial colors because of their link to things like hyperactivity. Now, I don't know any mom or dad on the planet that's not trying to get their kids to be a little less hyperactive, you know.
Right.
And so with four kids, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, if countries around the world are removing these artificial colors because of the link to hyperactivity, I mean, should I try it here, you know? I mean, if I just remove artificial colors for a couple of weeks, what's going to happen? And interestingly, you know, there were other studies. And so internationally, yes, there are these studies that have been conducted. And here's the critical point, by independent scientists. Because as I started really looking at the data, you know, there's piles of science. I mean, so much mounting scientific evidence. And I document that in my book. You know, I've got 60 pages of endnotes there. But what was fascinating was that in working with researchers from Harvard, these guys were telling me, they were like, it absolutely depends on the source of funding, what the outcome, how that's going to influence the outcome of a study. And so they had particularly studied the beverage industry, and what they found was that if the food and beverage industry funded the study, guess what? It favored the food and beverage industry
the majority of
the time. Whereas when an independent scientist who was, you know, independently funded also conducted that same study, it came to an entirely different conclusion. So, I mean, that's pretty obvious once you hear it. But I think, you know, I wasn't aware that it was that deep. And, you know, here you've got these guys at Harvard saying, you got to pay attention to this. So once I started paying attention to that, you know, I was looking, okay, whenever anybody sends me anything, I'm like, just tell me who's funded it first, and then we'll take it from there. And so, you know, whenever there's a study, that is probably one of the first questions you want to ask is who's funded this, you know. And so when I was looking at these studies on the artificial colors, for example, I mean, they were so compelling out of the UK, out of Australia. They had been conducted independently 7 years apart. They were, you know, they were double-blind studies, which meant the doctors weren't aware of how it was being done, the patients. So it was truly, you know, what's happening to these kids. And the resounding answer was that these artificial colors were contributing to hyperactivity. So, you know, you're looking at that and you're thinking, okay, that's one thing. But then this was the thing that absolutely got me. Our American company, Coca-Cola, Kraft, the UK division of Walmart, what they did in response to that study is that they removed the artificial colors from the products that they sell overseas. The products that are marketed to the kids, so the blue yogurt and everything else, those artificial colors came out, but they didn't come out here. And it was really that double standard where I had to say, that doesn't sit right, you know, because basically the value that they've placed on the lives of kids in other countries they're not placing on the lives of American kids. And
Girl, Barbara, let me ask you that, because to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I watched your talk, and you are so politically correct how you speak, and you have to when you really are attacking pretty much the milk, the wheat, the soy, the corn, you know, because they're all bad for us, and we know that. Well, we know it. Most people have no idea. So I love how you take the address of, you know, we took another option, or they said they didn't want to do it because it wasn't proven, you know, safe for humans, and, you know, we took another direction. It was also not proven dangerous either. But even with the way this is, would this be that the taking the dyes out, would it be more expensive? Or it seems like it would cost more to do it that way and send it overseas. It seems like the way they're doing it here is way more cost-effective as analysis. They're going to make more money if they don't do that. Is that correct?
Exactly. And so, you know, they're only going to do it when the consumer demand hits or when they feel pressure from the government, like regulation. And so what happened was sort of they had both those things hit. So the consumers, because, you know, as this material was presented in the press and they heard it on TV, the consumers were like, hey, we want that out of our food. And then what was interesting is that then there was going to be legislation that was going to introduce that was going to say, you know, to exercise precaution to protect the health of the children in the United Kingdom, we're going to, you know, ask that these companies remove these ingredients. So there were a couple things going on. The environment was different, you know. And so, you know, basically you come back to the U.S. and, a lot of the science hasn't been openly discussed. I mean, it's not something we necessarily hear about a lot in the news, you know. And then, B, you know, it's a different regulatory, it's a different legislative environment politically. And so, you know, as I was learning all of this, so that was the one example with the artificial colors. Another biggie that really got me because of how much of it I had served my family, given the kids, given my husband, had during my pregnancies, was that there is an artificial growth hormone that we use here in the United States, and we inject it into our cows, and it helps them make more milk. So again, you know, you compartmentalize. You say, okay, me, the financial analyst that I used to be, that makes so much sense. That's going to drive profitability for the dairy industry. That is super smart, great business model. Flip side is that governments around the world said, we don't have any long-term human studies about what the health impacts might be. And the concern that stopped them from introducing that artificial growth hormone into the dairy was that it made the cows so sick with all kinds of diseases and ovarian cysts, and it required all this antibiotic use in the animals. But they basically said, we don't want to do that to our animals. We don't want to introduce this into the way we're treating the animals and any risk that it might present to the milk, so we're going to opt out. And so at that point, when we introduced this artificial growth hormone into our dairy in 1994, we were the only developed country in the world to do it. And I mean, I gotta tell you, like, when I learned that stuff, you know, it, like, you have to push back from the table because that challenges more than just the way you push your grocery cart through the grocery store. I mean, you step back from that and you're saying, okay, why are we the only country that does it this way? Is it really all about money? You know, is it really all about money? And it really challenged at that point a belief system, you know, and I had to step back and say, okay, if this is truly the system we've got today where it's shareholder returns and it's all about profitability, and we see that, you know, we know that. That's definitely a huge part of the drive in these companies. Then what that means is that there's an opportunity for all of us to do what we can with this information to educate each other, and that we can shift. We can start to, you know, change the way we spend our dollars in the grocery store, so that these companies will see that we do have an interest in these foods that are free from artificial growth hormones, genetically engineered ingredients, or, you know, artificial colors. And what's fascinating to me is that these companies, these really big companies, they know that. And they know it for a lot of reasons. They know it because their own kids have autism or allergies or ADHD, or their own wives have breast cancer. All of the concerns that have been around these ingredients, which is why other countries said, you know, they've been linked to things like cancer, they've been linked to things like ADHD, we're going to opt out. All of those concerns are now being felt by our own families, regardless of where we are. It doesn't matter if you're the CEO of a big food company. It doesn't matter where you are socioeconomically or where you are politically. one in two American men and one in three American women are expected to get cancer in their lifetime. And cancer, according to the CDC, cancer is now the leading cause of death by disease in kids under the age of 15. So, you know, we feel that as a country. We feel that, and we know that the rates of diabetes are prevalent. We know the rates of obesity are prevalent. One in three kids now has autism, allergies, ADHD, or asthma. We know that because we see it in our families. And so that's an irrefutable truth. And I think once you start there, once you say, you know what, there is so much more that unites us than divides us, once you start from that place, that's a place of love. And to me, that is the most powerful place you can be. And it doesn't matter if you're the executive in these food industries or if you're somebody who's really a pioneer crusading for health. That's the unifying force. And as I kind of look at that today, you know, I really think, and you know, it's the competitor in me where it's like, this as a country, we have to address this because we won't be able to compete in the global marketplace because we're going to be so sick. You already hear concerns about the military not being able to fill ranks because people are so obese. You know, it's truly going to hamper our country in a whole lot of ways, economically, with growth, with innovation, with creativity. And, you know, you just sort of feel like we've got to get our game on. And to really say, you know, how can we come together as a country to fix this so that we can put our best foot forward, so that we're the healthiest, most vibrant, most intellectual country that we can be. And that's going to take a collective effort. And I really think it's because of that that I don't spend a whole lot of time looking back. I don't want to spend any time blaming or finger pointing. You know, this is what we have all inherited. It's simply where we are today. Now let's look forward. We've got a wide open landscape. If you could paint that thing, what do you want it to look like? And to me, that's the opportunity. And I think there's so many opportunities. You guys are a great example of that, of saying, you know what? We don't need to wait for anybody's permission to do this. Look, here's this program that I've put together, and it's working, you know? And you've got testimony after testimony after testimony. And diet's like religion. It's not one size fits all. Exercise is the same way. It's not one size fits all. But if you can take something that's working and grow that and use it. And to me, you know, I look at what you're doing. I look about the information that I have to offer. I mean, it's truly a gift. And if you can give it as a gift to say, you know, I'm giving this to you because I care so much for the people that you love, your family, your friends, to be able to give this information, to be able to give a program like yours as a gift to those people, that's when the reception is there, because then people realize, you know, you're not telling me what to do and you're not trying to scare me. You're just saying, This has been so life-changing. It's so inspiring. And I think, you know, we hear the same stories where, I mean, you guys know, if you look at the spectrum of kind of all the junk food that's hopped up on all these artificial ingredients and it's all processed and it's essentially, you know, the Harvard guys, they call it fake food, you know, because it's full of all these ingredients that are just engineered in a lab that don't exist in nature. And so he, you know, this one guy called it fake food, and I thought, that's pretty powerful coming out of Harvard, you know. And if you really kind of go along that spectrum, and I mean, man, I did. I had to start super slow because I had this moment where I had learned so much. I couldn't unlearn it. I had boxes of fluorescent mac and cheese and tubes of blue yogurt and all these, you know, things that I stuck in the microwave. I mean, that was what the kitchen was full of, and I thought, where do I even start? And I knew that I couldn't do everything all at once, that there would be complete mutiny at the kitchen table if I even tried. And so, you know, I was like, how do I do this in baby steps? How can I give myself permission to do one thing? You know, and you hear it a lot in exercise programs. It's like, it's that first time you walk around the block for 5 minutes. It's those tiny little steps. You cannot underestimate the power of those tiny, tiny first steps, because that's how we all learned. That's how we all learned to walk. That's how we all learned how to read. How we all learned how to ride a bike. And that's kind of where we are on this whole food landscape right now. We got to relearn this thing again. And so, you know, we started to opt out of one thing. You know, we did one thing a week. You could do one thing a month, whatever you can handle, whatever capacity you have. And that was truly where we started, by simply doing one thing. You know, we tried to reduce the kids' exposure to the artificial colors by switching to blue yogurt with sprinkles. We tried to use a little bit less of the fluorescent orange mac and cheese powder on that, you know, box of mac and cheese. We started making these baby steps, and, you know, you build your, like anything, you build your confidence as you go. And as we did that, we realized that there's so much that we can do. in what can seem like a completely out of control situation. And so really, you know, that to me is where the inspiration lies. And I think we're like, I mean, like you would see in your program over and over, we're so much more powerful than we ever give ourselves credit for. And it's not until we begin to really move and to really exercise all of these opportunities in front of us that we see the enormous potential that we have.
Yeah, one of the things Sparky, you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that it's pretty awesome stuff. I saw the video when you talked about the corn, Robin, with the you know, the pesticides built into it. I haven't had a piece of corn since, but I get the whole thing with voting for your dollars or voting with your dollars when you go to the grocery store. I think one of the big things we have is we have, like, this huge community, and a lot of adults have families, and, like, for my thing, I was excited reading your Generation RX series and seeing, like, the video on the ground beef and the filler and some of the stuff on soda and then the whole Do the One Thing program, and I'm really interested in, like, getting my kids to a point slowly, like, some of the stuff that I can do, okay, now that I'm going to vote with my dollars, what can I do for them that works to get them, you know, what's the best alternative for the ground beef or the snack or, you know, something else? Because I think we do really great getting the kids into our workouts, but I think it's so challenging to try and get them situated with all the stuff that we're trying to put in their mouths.
You know, I think probably one of the first things, and again, this is as a mother of four, where I sort of, it's been fascinating because we came into the awareness, you know, my older two were sort of already, they had already formulated a lot of their taste, you know, and a lot of it had been on this processed food that we had started on. And then the younger two, I feel like caught them early enough. And so it's been fascinating to watch that now at their ages they are now, which is between 7 and 12. And I think, you know, we grow up in this culture where we think we have to do something perfectly or not at all. And I think to really step back and say this is about progress, not perfection. And to a lot of the same disciplines that you guys would have with your exercise program are the same disciplines that you're introducing here. It's about compassion and kindness and forgiveness and giving yourself permission to simply do one thing, you know. And so if that means you're sitting down with a kid and you're getting eggs out of the fridge and you're teaching them how to scramble an egg, it's fun. It's going to be messy. Don't worry about the kitchen getting messy. You know, like, give yourself permission to do that thing and engage them and recognize that just as you school your children in how to ride a bike or you school them on how to read, you can school them on this stuff, you know, and that it's going to go chapter by chapter. It's not going to happen all at once. You're going to have to go back to the beginning sometimes and really to take that approach with your kids, you know. I mean, it's just little things like getting them to chop an onion. I mean, really engaging them. If you get them involved, then their curiosity is naturally going to take over and they're going to want to do more. And I also think it's, as you guys know, I mean, when you create something, whether it's a strong body or, you know, a breakfast, it's empowering. And to give that to a child is a great gift. And so I think to really engage them in any way you can is part of the creativity and the fun and what can be really messy with food. I mean, that's so much fun for a kid. And I would really kind of start there. And then, you know, their curiosity is going to pull them into trying different things. And if their hands are in some food and they're making something, they're going to want to try it. And it's a great way to introduce things in baby steps, you know. I mean, instead of that fluorescent mac and cheese, we got to a point where they could put olive oil on it or grate a little bit of their own cheese if they wanted to, or, you know, whatever they wanted to do, however they wanted to spice it up. You know, one of my boys is just, he loves spices, and so he's constantly adding things to dishes, you know, and let them do it, you know. And sure, you may have to toss out a little bit of noodles sometimes because they completely overdo it, but, you know, give them that opportunity to experiment and see what it feels like, and I think that's an incredibly important part of it.
That's a great idea. My kid loves mixing up some of the Maste pizza dough. That's like some of the funnest thing for him to do. Cool.
Well, one of the things here we do, Robert, too, and because a lot of obesity that I've found just through all the study that I've been through and the nutritionists that I work with, you know, is the weight, main thing is about wheat and dairy and mainly about getting them to, you know, transfer over, not even like give up, but just replace. So in our place, you know, we'll drink either almond milk or coconut milk or rice milk or whatever for the milk. And then for cheese, I turn people on to, like, Manchego, you know, sheep cheese, or, you know, to try to just get them away from the cow, because of all the things, like you say, that they do to the cow. And then for the wheat, we turn them on to things like the feta pasta, eat pink yotta, which I did. I have a whole section on Team DDP Yoga on wheat and dairy. And don't eat this, eat that. You know, so you got a replacement. If there's always a replacement, I think it's much easier to give it to get anyone to do it. Adults are pretty hard too. Kids are a whole other level, but adults are pretty hard to get them to change. You know, they're trying. Terry, I'm sure you have something to say in all this. Terry, why don't you chime in here?
I do. I've been following Robin and listening and learning, and I'm a celiac. I'm concerned for my grown son and now my 19-month-old granddaughter. So at my house, she eats dairy, soy, and gluten-free, not always over there. I try to encourage as best they can, but I like how you said sometimes to just start one at a time. You have to sometimes just evolve slowly into this. Some people jump right in and can do all things, but I think it's encouraging to have your kids get involved and change slowly, but toward a goal, and include them in it. And at 19 months, I really have control over at least serving it. She doesn't always eat, but it's a major concern because I know what I've been going through with asthma. Once I stopped my processed foods, I've dumped 2 asthma drugs. I'm in the process of my last inhaler, and I have the weakest strength. And being a celiac since 07, just eliminating the wheat and gluten, I had to correct some other diseases cause, but it seems to be so much about nutrition, obviously, and the exercise that goes with it. But everything you eat, I learned one bite of wheat brings me to my knees. So every bite of food is important that goes into your mouth. We just didn't get the importance.
Well, you know, and I think, too, you know, part of it, I really kind of step back, and as I'm a complete number cruncher, and I love the data, and I get really wonky on it, you know, and I just love digging into it. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I was really sensitive to, you know, how have we become so removed from food and what's in it and what it was truly intended to do, which is to nourish us and to create health, you know, and how have we gotten to a place where we are literally eating stuff that is hopped up on artificial colors and artificial growth hormones and genetically engineered corn that is now producing its own insecticide. I mean, some of the headlines are so stunning that they're almost impossible to digest because you're just thinking, how have we allowed our food supply to become this? And again, it brings, you know, into this kind of this greater challenge where people might just say, it's too much. I don't want to hear this. I can't do anything. I want to shut down. And to really say, okay, none of us can do everything. We don't live in a perfect world. And so what can we do? Well, we can all do one thing. And so, you know, if you want to opt out of that artificial growth hormone, that dairy, then do that. If you want to opt out of these genetically engineered corn plants that are now engineered to literally so that that seed creates its own insecticide so that bugs won't eat it, you know, without any long-term studies of knowing what the impact of humans eating that corn might be, then opt out of that. You know, pick one thing where you want to start and opt out. And I think that is such an incredibly important focus, again, that this is about progress, not perfection, because none of us can do everything. But all of us can do something. And I think it's those one things that start to create the shift. And you take a company like Kraft, for example, and already a third of their products are better for you products. So they're getting the message. I've been in-house with some of these major companies. And you sit down with those employees and their parents just like us. And for them to say, you know, we know this, and how are we gonna turn this, you know, food Titanic around? And they're beginning to do it. And I think really it's coming together and saying, again, none of us would have chosen this food system. It's where we are today. It's been built up and created over the last several decades. You know, now that we know this, now that we've sort of lifted the cover and we can see it for what it is, how do we want it to look going forward? And that's where the opportunity lies. And again, it's like you can do stuff in your own kitchen. You can start having fun with food with your kids, you know. You can form a book club. You can have a movie group, movie night. There's so many amazing films. Some of them are really funny. Some of them are pretty scary, but there are so many to choose from where you can have a movie night where you're learning about this stuff. You can find like-minded parents at your kid's school or in your office. You know, one of the most important things, I think, before anybody gets started when they're trying to make these changes or modifications in the way they feed their family or the way they eat, is to find a friend who feels the same way you do, who knows that it really matters and really wants to move through it with you. Because if you have somebody there standing beside you when things get tough or when somebody says a negative comment or when someone rolls their eyes, you're going to need that friend standing there cheering you on. So it's so important, really, to me, before you do anything, that you find that friend first. And what's amazing, again, is because of the rates of diseases, you know, the rates of diabetes, obesity, I mean, it's impacting our communities, our families, our, you know, whether it's in our churches, whether it's in our kids' schools, and to really know that it's truly a concern to everybody. Some have vocalized it. Some are still very quiet about that concern. But to know that it's truly a concern to just countless Americans and to really start there from that place of understanding, you realize that, you know, it really is an opportunity to come together as communities and restore the health of our country.
Robert, what did I ask you before? Anybody who's in the chat room, Robert or Sparky, why don't you just take any questions? Anybody has any questions? And Spark, just step on it and let me know. If you have any, anybody in the chat room who wants to ask Robin a direct question or whatever,
we actually got one lined up about corn.
Okay, why don't you?
People are asking about it. Is all corn GMO, and how can you tell?
You know, no, not all corn is genetically GMO. Stands for genetically modified organisms, and what that means is that in the 1990s there was a new technology that was introduced into our agricultural systems. And basically, in a laboratory, what it enabled the scientists to do were to basically using this new technology and these things that are called gene guns to insert new proteins and alter the DNA of a corn seed. And the reason that they did that was because there was growing concern over the spraying of insecticides over corn fields. And so what they were able to do with this new technology was engineer these new characteristics into the corn seed and then patent them so that that corn could then literally create its own insecticidal toxins internally. So, you know, prior you knew to sort of wash off corn and rinse off any things that might be sprayed on it in the field. But now you've got that corn plant literally producing its own insecticide. And when that shift happened in the 1990s, corn went from being regulated by the USDA as a plant crop to having to be regulated by the EPA as an insecticide because it was creating its own insecticide. And so, you know, a lot of that corn is primarily grown for livestock feed and for ethanol. So it finds its way into our food system in different ways. The only way that you can ensure you're not eating that corn is to buy something that carries the USDA organic seal on it, because by law, that corn is not allowed to be grown using that genetically engineered technology process, which enables, you know, the spraying of additional chemicals or this creation internally of the insecticide itself. And so the only foolproof way right now to ensure that is to get that USDA organic, which I have a problem with that because I don't know about you guys, but that stuff is way more expensive. And so, again, yeah, when I started digging into that, because I thought, you know, I don't want people telling me to buy organic. That stuff's way more expensive. I'm going to feel guilty about it, and it makes you want to shut down. And so as I really looked into, okay, well, why is it more expensive? Interestingly, as a national family, again, as we all pay into, you know, the national budget with our taxpayer money and the revenue they collect from all of us as taxpayers, that money is then used to grow the crops that are genetically engineered to either produce their own insecticides or to withstand all of these chemicals. That's what the taxpayer dollars are used for. While the farmers that are growing things organically, which means without the use of all these chemicals and this technology, they're charged fees to prove that their stuff is safe. They're then charged fees to label it, and they don't get all the assistance programs, whether it's marketing or financial or insurance. They don't get all that assistance. And so they're basically, you know, they're flying solo. They don't get the same financial support that the guys get that are growing things with this new technology. And, you know, if you step back from that and you think, if you were to ask any American, you know, do you want your food grown with more chemicals or less chemicals? Do you want your food to be producing its own insecticide internally, or would you rather be able to wash that off? you know, I mean, most would opt for, I want to eat fewer chemicals, especially in light of the mounting scientific evidence that's showing the link that chemicals, you know, and pesticides and things like this have to cancers, to autism, to development of little boys. I mean, it's all kinds of scary stuff that it's being linked to, and that scientific evidence continues to grow. And so, you know, you again, that's where you step back and you say, okay, for the national family, this is not what we would choose. And that's going to take all of us getting involved again. You know, democracy works when we get involved. And that was kind of an intimidating thought to me when people said, you should reach out to, you know, your local congressman or your local senator, and you're thinking, well, who am I to do that? You know, I'm this mom of four, and I've got this baby on my hip. And yet at the same time, I learned that one of our representatives had a family member with cancer. So I thought, you know, okay, he's just somebody's brother whose sister has cancer, you know. And again, I kind of came at it from that common ground, and it was fascinating because, you know, you realize there is so much more that unites us than divides us, and that there is this incredible concern we have for the health of our family.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Robert. What do you think? Because I know there's a little bit of a push out there right now to get, like, there's so many labels. No trans fat, no gluten, no this, no that. I mean, you look at some of these bags, they got like 30 things on there. Some of them, there's none of this and none of that. What do you think the chances of making, or how do we make it happen to make them have to put genetically modified, put the GMO label on it? Like, they're GMO. Because I was in Lancaster for this baseball thing I had to do there for DDP Yoga. And, you know, a lot of fields there, a lot of, you know, farm country there. And, you know, they got all the stands on the corners. So I got out of my car and I looked up and I said, your corner, I'm just curious, is this GMO? He said, no, it's not. I said, so it's real seeds? He said, absolutely. And so I know that they exist, a lot of small farmers, you know, that do that. But when it comes to the mass production, you're right. I don't eat it. I don't eat it anymore. Especially after I heard the pesticide thing you say, because I'm trying to keep as much of that stuff out of my body as I can. But what do you think the odds are, or how do we go about making it happen so they have to put GMO on their label, and which would be on just about everything in a supermarket, pretty much?
I mean, okay, so the industry's going to say it's so expensive. Consumers will bear that cost. You know, what are we going to do? We don't want to do that. You know, this is just a group of elite people that want to have this label, and, you know, it's going to impact food prices, which are already being impacted, you know. And if you step back again from that, you sort of go global with the lens, which we don't tend to do that often, and it's fascinating when you do, especially around something as big as food. Over 40 countries around the world already label this stuff, which means that all of our American companies that sell in those 40 countries have figured out a way to label that stuff. And it's not a complicated label. It would be in that ingredient list. When you're scrolling through those ingredients, instead of it just saying soybeans, it would say genetically engineered soybeans. And instead of it just saying corn, it would say genetically engineered corn syrup. And so it's not like you've got to come up with a whole new label. You've just got to insert two words into that ingredient list that already exists. You know, and I mean, you know how it is on a lot of that processed food. I mean, there can be 40 ingredients and they're all ready. So an additional two words, it's not something that's going to break the bank.
But how do we make that happen? Because, you know, I just heard about it. The first thing that I thought, they're never going to do that because they don't want to make it feel like this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the industry absolutely doesn't want it to happen. The best initiative that's in place right now, it's been introduced, I think, in, you know, 14, 15, 16 states around the country have tried to introduce legislation. And it's, you know, it's all over the country. It's not in the places that may be stereotyped this way. We've got legislation that was introduced in North Carolina. You know, I've heard from state senators in Georgia. I've heard from people in Texas, you know. And what's interesting is right now in California, where they have kind of different legislative rules, they've got a huge piece of legislation on the ballot for November that's calling for the labeling of these genetically engineered ingredients so that somebody who's had cancer or somebody who has a little boy with autism or somebody who has a family member with allergies can know that these genetically engineered ingredients are in their food. And California has this initiative in place, and it is absolutely fascinating to see the pesticide manufacturers, the chemical industry, pump money into defeating that measure. There is so so much money that is going into that right now, that will fund ad campaigns, you know, media buys on the airwaves. And I think the most important thing that people can do, and it's, you know, in this particular situation, what happens in California has a tremendous impact on the way that food is produced and processed in our country. California introduced a similar piece of legislation where they were calling on Coca-Cola and Pepsi to have to label a certain ingredient that they had in their sodas as it might be cancer-causing. And rather than go to that labeling, rather than do that labeling, because I think California represents like 12% of food consumption for the country. I mean, they're a sizable portion of our country's food consumption. Rather than do that labeling, Coca-Cola and Pepsi ended up changing their ingredients and modifying and not using the ingredients to begin with. And there has been talk about that from the food industry, that if this legislation were to pass, rather than label it, which obviously would introduce the potential for liability, for accountability, for traceability, should these ingredients actually prove harm, the industry has said we would probably just figure out alternative ingredients, which is what they've done in other countries. Rather than use genetically engineered ingredients, they've used other ones. And so that's what they've done. They formulated differently overseas. They would basically bring those products to our grocery store shelves, which would be a great thing. And so that initiative that's happening in California is so incredibly important to the country because, you know, it's billed as the California Right to Know initiative. But if it succeeds, that introduces the possibility that across the board we could see this change in our country. And it's the state that has the most clout for something like this, which is why the industry is pumping so much money in to defeating it. And I think, you know, when you really step back and you say the two largest genetically engineered crops that were introduced in the late 1990s are soy and corn. And it's, you know, those two are primarily fed to the animals that we eat. And interestingly, in other countries, if the animals are eating those crops, that meat has to be labeled, but we don't do that here. And, you know, the soy has been engineered to basically withstand just increasing doses and increasing saturation of these weed killers. And like we talked about earlier, the corn has been engineered to basically produce its own insecticide. And so, you know, that's a brilliant business model for the chemical industry. What's it doing to the rest of us? With no long-term human studies, we basically are that human study. And so I think that's why consumers now are starting to say, you know what, I do have cancer in my family. I do have a kid with allergies. I do have a son with autism. And I do have the right to know what's going into the food I'm feeding my family. And that's the shift that we're starting to see. And so I think because there's so much money that's going to be pumping in, I think it's incredibly important that those letters to the senator, the letters to the congressman, you know, to get involved in your community to help educate friends and family, people at your children's school, people at your offices, you know, around these types of things and say, you know, none of us really knew. And this is what we're learning today. And here are the opportunities in front of us to fix it. I think that's incredibly important.
Well, that's all really great information, but I so appreciate you coming on and talking about this. So I want to end with this because we're going to finish up here, but it seems like you just started and we're already at the ending. Your book, The Unhealthy Healthy Truth, why don't you talk about that? Because we have a lot of people who are readers on here, and I definitely want to push anything that you're doing because I love what you have to say.
Well, you know, the book came out about 3 years ago at Mother's Day, and it was really, I had been doing the research for several years up until that point, and then it sort of hit the national news, and they wanted to hear more about it and kind of get it all documented. And so we put it together in a book that tells my personal story, but then it's also incredibly well documented. It's a great resource. It's an encyclopedia, some have called it, but it's a very compelling personal story.
And can you just get it on Amazon?
Yes, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. My personal website is robinobrien.com. And, you know, I recognize that it's not one size fits all. Some people are going to really respond to the personal story and the incredible research that is presented there. Others are going to need it in a different format. They're going to need it in a fiction novel. Maybe they're going to need it in a documentary, or maybe they're going to need it in a film or some short YouTube video. I think to really, you know, we have these amazing people getting involved, amazing doctors and scientists. The medical community is really starting to say, We got to start doing a better job. We've got to start exercising precaution to protect the health of our family and protect the health of our country. And so, you know, I'm honored that it's out there as a tool in this toolbox to help create the health of our country that we all want to see.
That's awesome. Terry, you have anything to close in on?
I doubt. She's given us a lot of good ideas and great information. And this is what our team is good about, Robin, is sharing this information and being a support group for each other, because you're right, it's very hard to do this alone. And hopefully we'll change our lifestyles and include family and friends in our kitchens cooking instead of going out and grabbing quick food and start with our children now making cooking fun and important in our lives.
I mean, it's taking those baby steps. It's giving yourself permission to do one thing, you know. If you're hitting the drive-thru all the time, you know, just modify something in that order that you're picking up. I mean, it's taking those baby steps. We all started, you know, with those tiny baby steps when we learned to walk and then we learned to run. And I, you know, especially with you guys, I look at that story of Arthur and it's like, that is what it is all about. It is starting to take those baby steps. And I think that really is what we have to do. We have to give ourselves permission to do just that.
Sparky, you have anything to close with?
Yeah, just thanks for coming on, Robin. And I would just tell anybody, I started taking a look at your blog and at robinobrien.com. There's so much info there that if people want to drill down into it, you've got stuff like the Generation Rx stuff, articles on artificial hormones, the food additives, everything. So great source of information there. Thanks.
One of the most important things, I think, for me is how do we make this food more affordable to all Americans? Because
right.
I think it's a fundamental human right that we should be able to afford clean and safe food for our families, and we should know what's in our food. I think that is a human right. And so, you know, there's a lot of information too about how can we, you know, do a better job, eat less fake food, and do it on a budget.
No, you actually ended what I actually wanted to say at the end. That was perfect. You answered the question, because that's really what it comes down to. So many of the families go, we can't do this. You know, it's just too expensive. And what I say, and I tell them, at least try to start with the greens. If you can get those that are organic, you know, and then, you know, at least you, because greens are a huge base of the salad. And again, that salad I put up on the road, what I did was I went by Whole Foods and I picked up that $5.99 big tub of salad. And that'll feed you for a little while. And at least it's, like I make a humongous salad, but just for your family, getting some sort of healthy greens in your family, I think, is the best way to start anyway, you know, on my end. Robin, thank you so much for coming on. Anytime you have anything that you want to get out there, let us know, because we'll get behind whatever you're doing. We love what you're saying, and it's such a part of our model of what we're doing, and the food. I always tell people, you know, the workout's really important. The food is just as important, but your mindset's the most, because your mindset will tell you what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. Again, Robin, thank you so much for coming on. Sparky, thanks for coming on the show tonight. Terry, for filling in for Stacey. And Robert, as always, you're an awesome man. And, hey, guys, don't forget about the retreat. You want to go, you got till October 1st to get that thing down so you can come on down to Mexico. Again, Robin, thank you so much for coming. Everybody, you've been marvelous. You've been thankful for coming. See ya!
Kept it today, man. That was a great workout, man.
The powerbomb set up by Paige.
Oh!
Into the Diamond Cutter!
I don't believe it! Diamond Cutter out of the powerbomb!
We're going home.
You've been listening to DDP Radio. Tune in again next week for another edition of DDP Radio with more great guests, inspiration, and news from Diamond Dallas Page and Team DDP Yoga. Keep up all the great work, and most importantly,
own your life.
Talk Radio.